Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. We're now on, having done the four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, Mike Coulter.
Okay, this could be. I hesitated to include this, but my bike inspires me, and I remember being really. Actually, it was when I was working on the side project report, and I was still sort of figuring out the tiny habit stuff and BJ and stuff like that, and I wanted to build more exercise into my day and things like that, and it was the light nights had come. And there was one time, I had a particularly tough day, and it's about 6 o'clock, maybe a bit of half five. And I cook dinner pretty much most days in our house. My wife goes out to work, and I cook dinner pretty much most days. But like we don't eat till late. We don't eat till about 8 or something like that. And I just decided, you know what? I just fancy an ice cold glass of lager now. I'm just going to chill out for 20 minutes, half an hour of a lager. And I went to the fridge. And I look outside at the shed and I think, bike's in the shed, put the beer back, got on the bike. And then I designed a tiny habit. After you finish work, get your bike out of the shed and put it somewhere where you can see it. Because it became this visual prompt, this inspiration of saying, look, you've got this great bike, you've got great places, you've promised yourself you're going to change. Get on the bike. You can have the beer when you get back if you want while you're cooking. That's fine. But get on the bike. And so the bike totally inspired me. Now, this bike is 20 years old. I bought it in Edinburgh 20 years ago, and I bought it secondhand then. So it's not even 20 years. It's probably 25 years old. It's fairly new when I got it.
Please send a picture of your bike at the end. This is so beautiful because I say often my bike is my freedom. This is totally relatable.
Oh, that's great. In fact, you know, funny enough, when I proposed to my wife about 30 years ago, I've been at bikes forever. Instead of buying an engagement ring, I actually bought her a mountain bike.
Oh, perfect.
Call me romantic. I mean, Mr. Romantic or whatever. But yeah, so bikes have always been part of my life and always inspired me. As a younger man, I used to do endurance sports and crazy distances on bikes and that. And I've always been inspired by bikes because it's so simple as well. And again, I love how it comes back to tech. And you know, didn't Steve Jobs once say that a computer, when he's talking about early days of Apple, a computer is a bicycle for the mind. It's great. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm totally inspired by bikes.
Great answer. Love that. Please, as I say, just to reincorporate, please do send a picture of your bike.
Absolutely.
Second thing that inspired, yes.
Yeah, this should have come first, actually. My wife. My wife totally inspires me. When I met her, she was a typographer in an advertising agency. But this was pre-Mac. This was when you sent type out to be set and it came back as a sheet with type on, and then finished artists would cut it out and cow gum it down into that. So as I told you, when we got married, I mean, she's Lancashire, and she really does inspire me. We tried to live in Cornwall about 30 years ago, and we couldn't make it work financially. This was like the late 90s, just when the internet was starting. And I actually thought the internet was going to be a big deal. I was just an advertising copywriter then. But I saw the internet thing. I think this is going to shake up advertising. And in fact, in 1997, and I only sold it a couple of years ago, I registered a domain in 1997, which was digitalagency.com. I thought it was going to be a thing called digital agencies. And I thought, actually, even if I don't use it, people will want this domain, I'll make a fortune. I didn't make a fortune. I sold it very cheaply a couple of years ago. but in those days, like, you had to get on the internet. So we were living in this small town in Cornwall. It was Padstow, actually. We were living in Padstow. You had to get in touch with BT, and they had to connect you by an ISDN line actually to the big grey junction box in a thing. You know, it wasn't just like plugging your phone thing into a modem and everything. And it cost about $2,000 to get set up. And if you want to get a printer from Apple, everything was $2,000 for some reason. And I was going to set up like this internet business. And it just totally failed. So we ran out of money and we were struggling. So my wife knew two people from Edinburgh who came down to talk to me and said, we want to start a design and actually what end up as a digital company in Edinburgh. Will you come back? And it was great. It was a lifesaver for us. So we went back to Edinburgh and there were three of them started this agency. And they were smart. They had pals in an advertising agency and they said, why don't you have a studio in your agency which will be more attractive to clients and it'd be more cost-effective to you because you won't be sending it out to studios and stuff like that. So it's a really good business move. And yeah, my wife was part and parcel of all that. And she's always had a much better business brain for me. So she did that. So she started this business. And I didn't see much of her in the first few years because she was always working, but they grew it to 80 people. It went phenomenally well.
Wow.
But the thing I admire about her, and she inspires me, is that when she goes for something, she absolutely goes for it.
Yeah.
And even down to when it's run its course, she's ruthless, but she's practical and pragmatic. Because bear in mind, she loves design and she loves typography and things like that. But once she was running a business of 80 people, it was more about arguing with the council about business rates every day.
Yes.
Or relationship issues with staff and things like that, or whether the loos were working, or whether all the stuff other than what she loved about why she got in the business.
Yes.
So she did a really smart thing, and she gave herself Fridays off. And every Friday she went and worked for nothing for a year for free, as I say, for the best picture framer in town. She wanted to be a picture framer, and she just totally retrained, did it for nothing. 52 weeks a year, she worked every Friday to be a picture framer. And then when we moved back to Cornwall this last time, she got a picture framing business and it was on an industrial estate at her workshop. But still, me, she didn't do the same thing again. She, just as the then negotiation with an advertiser agency said, why don't you have an art studio in your agency? She thought, if that trick worked there, let's try it again. So she went to her workshop was like 30 minutes away. It's a bit of a drag to get to over in Bodmin from where we live. But 5 minutes from us, as it's amazing. I mean, if you're in California, you wouldn't be surprised. There's this amazing contemporary art gallery. And you know, like cool restaurants have an open kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
She said to this contemporary art guy, because she knew there's extra space at the guy, she says, why do you have a picture framers inside your art gallery? And they said, oh, that's a cool idea. We'd love that. But what was brilliant about it in terms of business is everybody who comes to look at art in an art gallery tends to like art and have something to frame.
Yes.
And the art gallery, who's supporting all these artists, needs to get the artist's work framed. So it was just a brilliant bit of business from her. But it wasn't done commercially. She just thought it was a really cool idea.
She just arrived knowing the solution to a pain they didn't know they had.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And it's worked really well. And she still does that. So
framing your career with a picture of a Mars bar is the whole thing. So yes, we could now be, I think that's the things that inspire you, correct? Is that right?
Yeah. Well, we've done two actually. I think was it three on the list for inspiring?
You can have three. So inspiration number three.
I've been really lucky my whole career that I've worked either with brilliant art director. Typically, for any listeners or viewers not totally conversant, but usually you work in a team in an advertising agency, a copywriter and an art director. Like me and you would be like a copywriter and art director now. And I've been really lucky. I've worked with some brilliant art directors who actually are really good at writing and have made me good. One of the best things that anybody can do, whether you're an art director or a creative director, a copywriter or art director, is this. The person I think that gives the most value in a creative team isn't always the person that has the idea. It's the, because you have dozens of ideas. It's the person who says, nah, that's the one. That's awesome. Go with that. And of course, the ultimate role of that is a creative director. So I always have some great creative directors. And there was one particular creative director, Dave Hyatt, my creative director, and he totally inspires me. But years ago, and this was good psych.
And I know David Hyatt, just planting that, because that's someone you're very collaboratively connected to him.
Yeah.
Yes.
We work very closely together, but he's very inspiring. He's an utterly brilliant writer, very, very inspiring writer. So I had this creative director years ago in London. I worked at an agency called Hornish Collis Curven. And in those days, it was the here's how advertising's changed from those days. These days, most advertising agencies now are owned by these massive global entities or PLCs. In the heyday of advertising, it literally had the name of the people over the door who were producing the work. You had the creative director, the head of strategy, and the account director, or whatever. And that's I think that's one of the reasons why it's not such a happy
It's the tragedy of the economy of scale going wrong, whereas Coulter and Hyatt or Hyatt and Coulter, it's over the door of the doom.
Exactly. So I've been looking at creative directors, but I just want to bring in a quick psychology story about what inspired me. That so one of the reasons you'd go to an advertising agency would be the caliber of the people whose name was over there. You wanted to work with them. It's a bit like going to a football club where they've got a star striker or a star manager or something like that. So I had this creative director called Graham Collis, and how it worked was when you had you get a brief for an ad. And you'd write the copy, you'd write the copy. And then a production person would take your copy with a stamp on the back, literally a stamp on the back of the A4 paper that copy was printed on. And it got the strategy director who wrote the brief, and he'd read it to see if it met the brief, and the account director who'd have to sort it, and they'd have to literally sign off. And the final sign off came from the creative director. And one day a production guy came in, Crooks and I had done the rounds to get the sign offs for my copy. And the production guy came in and said, "Hey, Mike, you might want to see this." I said, "What?" "Oh, has Graham changed my copy?" He said, no, he loves it." He said, "Look at this." And he signed it on the back with his name. And everybody else, all his partners could see this when they saw it. And it said, he just put in brackets, obviously, "I wish I'd written this." This guy was one of the greatest copywriters on the planet. And he said, "I wish I'd written this."
Yes.
I would have walked through hot coals for that guy ever since, from then on, and did. And my work improved, and I got put on better and better accounts.
Yes.
So that was like a soft skill in the sense of that was motivation, but I didn't need it because I was motivated anyway.
Yeah.
But an even softer one, but I think more instructive one was this. So one day, this same creative director calls me in, and he said that, "Mike, we're putting on your new account." I said, "Okay, what am I working on?" He said, "We've just won the Oddbins account."
The off-license, I remember.
Yeah, off-license chair. Okay. He said, "You fancy it?" I said, "I really do fancy it, yeah." I said, "I think it's a great brand. I've used them myself. I think they're really great and things like that." He said, "Okay." He said, you live out in Oxfordshire, don't you? I used to get the training from Didcot every day to Paddington. I did 200-year-old thatched cottage up in the whatever." And he said, "You get the train from Paddington, don't you? You get the train from Paddington." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, there's an Oddbins opposite St. Mary's Hospital in Paddington." "Oh, yeah." "And? Well, we've set up an account for you there." "So why is that?" He said, "Well, every Friday you can finish work whatever time you want, Friday afternoon." Remember my dad, football?
Yes, absolutely.
"Every Friday, you can take Friday afternoon off. But go and hang out at the Oddbins in St. Mary's near Paddington. Get to know the manager, speak to the customers, ask him what's selling, what isn't selling, what's he doing and all that. Then get anything you want. Why, if you want to do an ad on champagne, fine. If you want to do it on Australian beers, fine. If you don't, whatever you want, we don't care. Just but sound out the manager for what the vibe is at the moment in the industry."
And was this a flagship store, which is why this was the one?
No, it's just a regular. The flagship store was somewhere like in Farringdon, which was a big old vaulted place. And they were because Oddbins originally, before they were bought by Seagram's and became a bit like advertising agencies bought by a multinational.
Yeah.
Oddbins was a very small niche operator. They literally bought odd bin ends of wine. If there were 15 cases left in some vineyard in France, they'd have those 15 cases or 100 cases from some Californian winery or whatever. It literally was, when it was gone, it was gone.
Yeah.
And that's what made it kind of really unique and different. It wasn't like a never-ending same brand bottles. So, yeah, and that was the deal. He said, "Look, go and chat to the managers, get whatever you want, go home that weekend, drink it." He said, "The deal is, if you come back with award-winning advertising on Mondays, every Monday, I'll sign off your drinks bill." So for 2 years, I drank for free and won advertising awards for the work I was doing. So if that wasn't inspirational, I don't know what is.
That is just great.
Chris, isn't it?
Which brings us beautifully to the end of the three things that inspire you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And now this is the two squirrels. What are your two monsters of distraction? What two things?
Can I get help? This might, we might have to wing it. Just a slight conversation here. I would think that you mentioned about the manifest. Well, the bikes thing is I cannot go past a bike shop without going in it. Well, honestly, I can't
answer.
There is no. That's actually not true. I was just, there's no bike shop on the planet. There's plenty of bike shops. I've got a nose for bike shops.
Yeah,
I know a good and from a bad end. So bike shops is just my squirrel moment. I'm just
That's
gone.
A great squirrel. We don't need to unpack that anymore. Right. I love it. Second squirrel.
I cannot walk past a manifesto without reading it. I love manifestos, and I mean I got a very broad definition of manifestos from this point of view. Like, just do it from Nike. That's a manifesto.
Yes,
and you know. I just get mesmerized by them and the backstory, you know, I mean, you know, just do it was the last words of a serial killer who was going to electric chair. Nothing to do with, think different from Apple. So you can have a two word manifesto or a book can be a manifesto. David Hyatt wrote Do Purpose, which was like, you know, 250 pages, 200 pages or whatever.
Yes.
But it's a manifesto.
Yes.
And so a lot of books I read, you know, I read them with half a cocked eye of what's the manifesto here. Yeah, so that's my second thing is so
it's a really attuned process. I know you know exactly what it is, but it sounds like it's a really attuned purpose imperative. What is this for?
Yeah, and of course there's a practical reason for it. I mean, for the last 2 years I've been training people how to write manifestos, so I'm always looking for new examples of it to freshen the thing up. And the last thing I would say is that half of the great ads that you'll see in the awards book or half of the great ads that I love are manifestos. They're why products exist, why you should consider buying this product and what this product will do for your life.
Yes.
You know, which is pretty much a manifesto.
I would love to ask your help, advice and opinion about Legacy Life Reflections when this is done.
Yeah, sure.
And again, coming full circle to your own love of a Mars bar, work, rest and play is a manifesto.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I'll just plant this idea. I'll mention this at the very end, but Legacy Life Reflections is to record one's life story for posterity. But we'll come on to that in a second.
Yeah.
And now we're on to the one, which is a quirky or unusual fact about you, Mike Coulter, that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
Okay. So for this, I'm going to take you back to my grammar school. And it's the 1960s, mid-1960s. So the Beatles are there and everything. And I'd have to Wikipedia this. I'm not sure when the Cold War ended. You know, the Cold War for our younger listeners or younger viewers was, there was a time when we thought, and this is kind of appropriate in the modern day. I mean, yesterday was 4 years of Russia declaring war on Ukraine.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, when I went to secondary school, there was still a chance that we thought the Russians might invade Europe and we might have Russians in Yorkshire. So as I went to a grammar school and it was unusual in that just like other schools, there was, you know, all the usual subjects were taught, including languages. And languages, which most schools did, were French and German. Mm-hmm. Our school was unusual in that they'd managed to lure a teacher there. He's quite an aging teacher, but he was hugely respected. So there was a third language taught at the school I went to, which was Russian. And all the in West Riding, where I grew up, all the education departments were all left-leaning, you know, slightly left-leaning in terms of their political kind of viewpoints and things like that. So one day at some council meeting or some education board meeting, someone said, can I float an impossible idea here? Yeah. What if Russia really did invade and there were troops in Yorkshire and they took over the running of Yorkshire or Halifax? Well, what's your point? Who speaks Russian? Oh, yeah. Well, what shall we do? Well, there's that school in Halifax, Halifax Technical High School. They're the only school that got a Russian class. Okay, what should we do? Let's fast track the kids in that class to teaching Russian, increase the amount they taught. So we've got 30 kids that can speak Russian for when the Russians invade.
This is so beautiful. It's like Warmington on Sea in Dad's Army.
So I was one of the kids taught Russian. and so the increased number of classes we had a week at school, and then on Wednesday afternoons, which was thinking Wednesday afternoon was ultimately, am I going to play football on Wednesday afternoon? Well, that did transpire. But Wednesday afternoons, we were coached to Huddersfield, where there was a language lab where these big old open spool tape recorders and you put headphones on and were taught Russian by rote for 3 hours solid.
Fantastic.
It was awful. I hated it. I had no motivation. I didn't even want to be in the Russian class in the first place. But I was force-fed Russian. It's a bit like I said before, if I was force-fed broccoli, I will never, ever get into it. It was the same with the Russian. So I kind of refused to speak to them. I just didn't want to know. So I was the worst Russian speaker in the Russian speaking class.
In my whole circa 270-odd episodes, that's the first person's quirky or unusual fact, I'm the reluctant Russian student.
Yeah, so that was, so we were taught Russians as kids. We taught Russian as kids just in case the Russians invaded Halifax.
Perfect. We have shaken your tree, Mike Coulter. And now we stay in your clearing, which is on your back in the Atlantic, or of course on the Camel Trail. Now, next, we talk about alchemy and gold, which is where your manifesto comes in, because this is your purpose imperative. Yeah. So when you're at purpose and in flow, Mike Coulter, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
I think it's figuring out how to change my own behavior for the better. Or if asked, I never force it on people. If I'm ever asked for advice, sharing it with them. And just from the point, not by any stretch of the imagination, trying to give anybody approved advice. If anybody needs any help in terms of change behavior, get professional training, either work with approved therapist, speak to your GP, all that usual disclaimers that we have to put in. I'm not giving any advice and I don't give advice. I just say, here's what happened to me and here's what I did and here's why I found it useful. And, you know, it might be tiny habits or whatever. So me, it's just sharing with people what I've tried and what's worked and what hasn't worked for me. And I want to make a distinction here that one of the most interesting things that I learned from BJ Fogg was that he talks about this concept called behavior matching. And a good behavior match is something a person wants to do. They're already motivated to do it. They can do, they've got the ability to do it, and it'll get them the results they want in a fairly quick bit of time. You know, for example, really quick, 30 seconds. A few years ago, I had a few issues, sort of low mood, I wasn't too happy and things like that. And the missus had been talking to one of her friends. She said something like, my husband was like your husband, he's great now. Oh, what did he do? Oh, we went to the village hall and went line dancing every Wednesday night or whatever. Okay, that's a real bad behavior match for me. Ability. Well, I was waiting for knee surgery. I could ride a bike, no problem, but I couldn't walk the dog. So I'm not going to go line dancing. Embarrassment. Yes. I'm not going to dance in front of anybody unless I'm at a wedding and I've had a couple of drinks. And my motivation to do it is really, really low. So it's not going to happen. So that was a really interesting aspect of it. So for me, So the thing is, it's sharing. In fact, I've got a newsletter, which is called Dog Fooders. And it's called Dog Fooders in the United States, again in the 60s. There's this company wanted to get into dog food, and rather than sort of start manufacturing on their own, they bought just regular stewed steak that humans ate and just relabeled it. So it was human consumption grade steak. Yeah. And the trick that the sales reps did when we went to the pet shops was, this dog food's so good, you could eat it yourself. This is where dog fooding comes from.
Yeah, and it's forkful.
And so dog food really is about, so the manual of the dog food is about really about, it's a user for people who will only give advice that they've already given themselves and taken themselves.
Yes.
And whether it worked for them or not. There's so many influencers and experts now in social media or LinkedIn or whatever telling us all what to do. And half the time, my fear or my worry or my assumption is, have you done that yourself? Yes. You know, I think there's a little bit too much do as I say, not as I do.
Yes.
And I think it should be do as I, if you want, try doing as I did, because this is what worked for me.
Yes.
It's a much more honest way of going about it. So, yeah, so I think just sharing what's worked with, what's worked, this has worked for me, it might work for you. Might not, but it might work for you. But this is genuine, field tested, even though it's like N1, just one person's point of view. This kind of worked for me, so it might work for you, might not.
And just to reincorporate, I love the idea that you got your bike out the shed and put it in plain view, because that was a high motivation factor for you changing your habit.
It's also a trigger to do the behavior when you see it. You know, it works with anything. I mean, I started taking, I worked with a nutritionist and started taking some, only a few supplements that I needed to fill a few gaps in my nutrition.
Yeah.
And I nailed that every single morning as I'm making a tea. I put them where I can see them, not even take them. Put them where you can see them. You know, if I've got something to do, put it where you can see. Sometimes you can have it a color that you can see.
Yeah.
See it across the room. Make it easy to do. And seeing something that you're going to do and having it to hand. And there's a lot of evidence that actually designing your environment, we talked about our home studios before and things like designing your environment to make it easy to do, make it more, you'll pop in a seat and you're off and ready to go. Not spending 20 minutes getting rid of the, making the bed or, you know, getting the light right or whatever.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And now I'm going to award you with a cake. Hurrah. So now this is where you get to put, first of all, do you like cake, Mike?
I love cake. Yes. Too much. Yes. A
cake of choice, please.
Christmas cake.
Oh, I say. Lovely. You're the first guest who's ever said Christmas cake.
Boom. Oh, well, there's a reason for it. There's a reason for it. My mum, no longer with us, but my mum used to, wherever I've been living in the world, my mum always used to make me a Christmas cake and send it. And it was always in this almost bomb-proof tin, about 17, layers of grease-proof paper, then tin foil, then in a tin with tape around. It used to take longer to get into the frigging tin to get to it, to eat. So my mom made one for me, and now my sister's taken over that mantle. But the reason of Christmas cake is, and my sister's on my brief every year, is extra cherries in the cake. You don't need a cherry on the top of Christmas cake. You've got dozens already in there.
Yes.
Enough anyway. Yeah.
Very happy you unpacked the bomb-proof Christmas cake as well. Now you get to put a cherry on the cake.
Yeah.
This is stuff like, what's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you sucker and pulled you towards your future, Mike Coulter?
There's an American choreographer called Twyla Tharp.
What a name, Twyla Tharp.
She's in her 80s and she still goes to the gym at 6:30 every day.
Yeah.
And at the gym are founders of businesses, senior executives, bankers and things like that. And she said, when she sees them, they're not merely getting in some exercise when they can. They're ambitious about taking control of their body. They're as ambitious about taking control of their body as they are about succeeding at work. Their body is like a second career. She says, like a pledge, devotion to your body requires daily renewal. That's one. So about making sure our tools are working okay for us to do stuff. Another is from a great meditation teacher that I bind to, and he just says, look, an anxious mind cannot exist in a relaxed body. I think it's a whole new take on the mind-body relationship.
Lovely. I'm just going to let that hang there. Lovely. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given by somebody else, Mike Coulter?
Say yes more often. There's a lot of talk about saying no, and I'd just literally unpack that in 20 seconds. Saying no to things like people wanting your time. Will you come and do this? Will you come and do that? Will you write that? Will you find out? Always interesting. Keep your antenna up. But we can't say yes to everything.
Yes.
But internal experiences. Oh, what's that funny pain in my tummy? Oh, I've got a pain in my neck. Oh, I feel a bit anxious. Oh, that's not great. Well, all these experiences we have in the body or the mind, so I'm talking about, yeah, I've had my run-ins with mental health, and I'm in a good place now, but mental health and anxiety and panic disorders and stuff like that, which have been, in a sense, paradoxically, a blessing. When they arrive and I struggle with them, I found that they get worse. They're already here.
Yes.
But saying yes stops that struggle and helps promote getting untangled from it. And, you know, it's that old saying, isn't it, that, you know, if you say no to it, it makes it more like Velcro.
Yeah.
If you say yes to it, it makes it a little more like Teflon and actually leaves you a lot quicker. So that's my biggest, say yes to all internal experience. Because if it's an internal experience, it's arrived already. The genie's out of the bottle if it's there and you're feeling something.
Yes.
So your response, the response of yes, it's like, yes, now what? How can I work with this?
That's so very relatable because of my passion and it working in the realm of comedy improvisation with its mindset of yes and.
Well, of course. Yes. I hadn't thought of that. Of course. Yes, absolutely.
Yes, yes, yes. Wonderful. So,
that's a big improv thing. It's yes and.
Exactly. Yes, yeah, and as opposed to no but, and the qualitative derivation of both.
Beautiful.
We're ramping up now to talk about Shakespeare in a moment, to talk about legacy. But before we get there, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. They don't like it up at Mr. Mannering. We've mentioned Dad's Army and Warmington on Sea and Russia already. Yeah, but now you've experienced this from within, might you most like to pass the golden baton along to in order to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going, Mike?
There are three people. Can I have three people?
Yes. Okay. I love that.
One guy's a friend of mine up in Scotland, in Edinburgh, who used to be a scallop fisherman. He used to hand dive for scallops at 4 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, and
before
awesome.
That, he wrote a book of his experience. He went and lived in Alaska in the wilds and built a log cabin, fending off bears. And before that, he trained with the French Foreign Legion. So there's a guy, he's called Guy Grieve. He's a miraculous, marvelous man.
Guy Grieve,
G-R-I-E-V-E, Guy Grieve. And he belts out a lovely opera tune every now and then. So it's Guy Grieve. There would be, of course, David Hyatt, who is gold standard. And the last one I say is a pal of mine who is a professor of business, I think, at Chicago Booth University. He's a huge friend of the Do Lectures. And my third one is a professor, I think he's a professor of entrepreneurial business at Chicago Booth University, and it's called Professor Greg Bunch. And he is the most wonderful, qualified, gifted, educated man I've ever known. He often uses poetry to unpack his thoughts. So yeah, Greg Bunch.
So I've got poetry, opera, and diving for scallops at 4 a.m. That's quite an elixir of awesomeness. Thank you very much. Love that.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And now, inspired by Shakespeare, all the world's a steed, and all the men and women merely players, how, when all is said and done, Mike Coulter, would you most like to be remembered?
I think it's just, I knew Mike, I liked Mike, I loved Mike.
Love that. This is the very exciting moment called Show Us Your QR Code, Please. And this is Megan. We're listening and watching and loving, but also Tiny Habits Business Class. What's the domain of where we can find out all about Mike Coulter on the
habitualize.com.
And if you're watching, you can scan the QR code and boom, takes you straight there. How very, very exciting. Also, if you'd like to connect with Mike on LinkedIn, you can connect with Mike Coulter on LinkedIn. Look for him, obviously. Don't misspell it. C-O-U-L-T-E-R. And you can scan this QR code as well, please. It's very, very exciting.
You make it easy for everyone to do. That's perfect. Behavior design. You're a behavior designer, Chris.
And I'm very visual like you are, so this is wonderful. Just a couple of announcements. If you would like to talk about having a conversation about being in this show too, the website for my show is thegoodlisteningtoshow.com. It also syndicates to UK Health Radio, and also, very excitingly, in the last month, as I go to press with Brushwood Media in the States. So it's my cunning plan to trebuchet into the States to get the Americans even more enamored. And then what I'm particularly excited about, and also I'd love to talk to you about this post this, Mike, is I've got a very special series strand using this construct that Mike and I have both been riffing on, using the clearing the tree, the da-da-da-da-da, to talk about legacy life reflections, which is to record your life story or the story of somebody that you love for posterity, lest we forget before it's too late, with me as your host. And you'll look, if you look at the website, the legacylifereflections.com, it's a series strand that's already been there within the Good Listening To Show. But my father, Colin Grimes, is an enigmatic mascot where he's sort of going, cheers to a good life. I recorded my father in the halcyon days of his 80s. He died a year and a half ago, but I got my dad when he was about 83. He lived until he was 86 in the halcyon days of his 80s, and a very precious recording and film of him it is. Back to you, Mike Coulter. You'll enjoy this. This is a final sort of epic coachy question. As this has been your moment in the sunshine, Mike Coulter, of the Good Listening To Show, Stories of Distinction and Genius, is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, Chris, just to thank you for giving me the opportunity to do it. I can see immediately how it fits with the lifetime legacy. It's been a bit more of a grown-up version, actually, of what I've been discovering with Do Radio and Three Wins. Like I said earlier, that by having the discipline of doing Three Wins for Do Radio, I've been amazed and surprised that I'm sort of figuring out my life in real time. And then when I went through the structure of your show, I found it really, really interesting. And just very quickly, I mean, we've done about 25 shows so far. And I think it's like 86,000 words a show. And where we talk about time, money, mojo. So if we've done 20 odd shows, I've already got like 60 or 70 with three subject matters, 60 or 70 stories.
Yes.
Most of which are about that have come out of my life. So I think what's been magical about this last hour with you and actually doing the preparation for it, I've almost got half my autobiography written. It's extraordinary. It's just a fantastic gift, that, because when do we find the time to do it? But it's taking no time. There's something really, you're onto something really mind-blowing here, particularly then the legacy thing, which is really cool.
Thank you. That's very, very much appreciated and precious feedback. And as I say, going forward, I would love to talk about, because your vibe attracts your tribe, I'd love to talk to you and Do Radio about, you know, lending this structure, curating this structure within that domain, because I love what you're all about and up to as well. As I say, genesis of the yellow door crossing the threshold. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of both you and David. I've seen you facilitate as well. I've been to a couple of the workshops that you do. What's that wonderful place in London where you do it?
Cecil Sharp House. Regent's Park, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy,
twice.
Isn't it?
Yeah, twice.
Yeah, I think strictly rehearsed there. You know, when they're doing the dance at rehearsing. Really good. Yeah.
So thank you so much, Mike. It's been an absolute deep privilege talking to you. And what a fantastic, glorious episode. I've got two episodes out of you, a nice, big, lovely, juicy an hour and a half together, which has been lovely. So thank you very much for watching. I've been Chris Grimes. This has been Mike Coulter. Thank you very much indeed. Good night. You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of the series strands is called Leadership Reflections, for business leaders or those of you that work in the leadership domain to be able to share your leadership lessons learned along your way. Maybe you'd like to play it forward as you move from one leadership opportunity to the next. Maybe you're about to stop and you'd like to drop the mic to preserve your leadership legacy, or you may just want to consolidate where you already are as you share your leadership reflections. Tune in next week for more stories from the clearing, and don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.